Please be seated. My friends, we're in the midst of a short sermon series entitled Shine the Light On, fill in the blank. Last Sunday, Reverend Karen shone the light on the wise men. Next Sunday, we're shining the light on folks dealing with chronic pain. But today, we're shining the light on black lives. You may recall that toward the end of last year, we did a full church book study with Reverend Dr. Carolyn Helsel on her book, Anxious to Talk About It, Helping White Christians Talk Faithfully About Racism. And in October, I did a sermon on how our denomination is dealing with issues of race as part of our discernment process. And so you might rightfully ask, well, why aren't we circling back to this topic again today? Well, as I told you in my sermon in October, I've always believed that MCC Austin has been pretty consistent in attempting to combat and denounce societal racism. But I know that I, as a white male, am not really in the best position to make that determination. And I have found it painful to discover that many of my black colleagues within MCC have described a culture of systemic racism within our denomination. In retrospect, I find that very disturbing, but also perhaps not particularly surprising, insofar as MCC in the U.S. is situated within a larger culture in which systemic racism and white privilege is pervasive. After all, it was less than 2 years ago in Charlottesville that violent, gun-toting white nationalists literally fought in the streets with anti-fascist groups and Black Lives Matter members. And perhaps even more disappointing, all our president would say is that there were good people on both sides of that confrontation. In the face of these realities, I think it's important that we continually address the issue of race, one of the most pressing social issues in our society and within our fellowship. And of course, I know that I, as a white male, have benefited from white privilege most of my life, perhaps sometimes, or probably sometimes without even realizing it. Like many of you, I may not even think about it all that often. And so, rather than me standing up here and pontificating about this subject, I'm going to lead a panel discussion with some of our black members. You may have noticed some, commonality among these three panel members. Unfortunately, we couldn't get any black women to join our panel, but so you guys will have to, represent your feminine sides, perhaps. I don't know. Anyway, these guys deal with this issue every day just because of who they are, and I'm very grateful to them for participating in our panel today. To set the stage, though, I'd like to read a short passage that was picked by Reverend Karen for today. It's an excerpt from Perspective, Confessing Racism by Elizabeth Lowry, and here it is. I was about 10 years old, standing in the kitchen, hanging around as bratty sisters do, and listening to my parents talk to my 15-year-old sister. The only words I remember are my mother's. You can't grow up white in the United States and not be racist. Wait, I'm white. My sister and I laugh about this moment, looking down at our pale arms in startled confusion. In truth, though, it was a defining moment, a freeing moment. My mother had given us permission to confess something terrible, to be honest with ourselves about the images, attitudes, and systems swirling around us. She removed the boogeyman of racism, the unknown, unidentified monster in a hooded robe, and said, "No, here's the mirror." My mother, in her stark, concise words, had given me permission to examine myself and my society and to be unafraid to admit what I found there. To confess that when I was 4 or 5 years old, I told my family I didn't want the baby black doll they had given me because I wanted a pretty one. To confess that when I was in second grade, I told a friend, a little brown boy, that he looked like a gorilla, oblivious to the weighty horror of those words. To confess that I am not exempt or unburdened by my racist image, language, and structures of my society. to confess that systems in my country have benefited and continue to benefit people who look like me. I've come to realize that this was one of the greatest gifts of parenting given to me. I have encountered so many white Americans who are afraid to talk about racism. It is the boogeyman. It's why folks start sentences like, "I'm not racist, but," or talk about their one black friend, or start accusing others of being racist, "but not me." It's why white people can get defensive or angry at any suggestion that we might need to examine ourselves or our society differently. We're afraid. But we exist in a prison when we live denying that anything is wrong. People recovering from alcoholism know this. First, you have to admit the problem. So let's get on to our panel. And I'm going to invite the panelists to just introduce themselves and say a little bit about how long you've been in this church.
I'm Lionel Laday. I've lived in Austin it's 11 years. And I've been a member here at MCC Austin for 11 years.
I'm Wesley Faulkner. I have been a member of this church since October 2015 and moved to Austin in 1995.
My name's Al Reed, and I have been in Austin for 35 years, and I've been a member of the church for 15.
Great. Thank you, guys. I heard a quote on NPR this morning, and I won't get it exactly right, but it was something like, most white people skate through life never having to worry about how their race will affect other people. And I certainly think that's true of me, probably for many of you, but I suspect it's not true for you guys. So could you comment on how your race affects your daily existence?
So for me, walking through life on a day-to-day basis, I find myself having to adjust how I do things or just what I'm doing, recognizing that my skin color, being black, affects life. For instance, going into a store, there's been times where I've been followed in a store where I see a white person not being followed. There are times where I realize that people see me and they make assumptions. They make assumptions based on ignorance, based on their upbringing, based on fear. One of the things that I do on a pretty regular basis when I'm walking in a area that I'm alone in, going up to my apartment, going into a neighborhood, I will make sure that I'm making myself known so that no one opens their door and startled by this black guy coming through. And so oftentimes when I'm going home, I whistle on my way up to my apartment. My partner will often open the door, hearing me coming. And sometimes I do it, I don't even realize I'm doing it, but one of the things that I recognize is someone comes out and they're met by this black guy walking, and people have made some really bad decisions. And so my way of handling it is I will whistle or sing so that someone knows someone's out there. If someone comes out in a business I'm in, I greet them. I try to manage their perceptions before they actually interact with me so that I'm in a safer place. So I'm they don't feel like I'm a threat. They don't feel like I am in some place where I shouldn't belong. And so I try to manage that. And most days, I just kind of walk through life doing that and not really thinking of that. Another instance is from time to time, I've got my dad's ability to have problems with speeding and a lead foot. My mom's never been stopped by the police. My dad and I have been stopped. And people say, "You shouldn't speed." I know I shouldn't speed. We should never speed. But we do from time to time when we get stopped. And so how I address that, I've had some situations that were really alarming when a police officer walks up to the car with his gun out. I would love to say that is how they walk to everyone's car, but I recognize that's how they walk to my car because they come with not all of them, but some come with the idea that this is a black guy, I'm in danger. And so I stick my hands out the window before I do that. And one example that I will share is I got stopped about a year ago, and an officer walked up and said, "Hey, calm down, I need you to calm down, don't be afraid. You're not in California or somewhere, nothing's gonna happen." And I would venture to say that doesn't happen with very many people when they get stopped, but that would happen with me. Then he apologized for me for the way I felt. And that's just kind of a common, normal occurrence in life for me, that my skin color, my race, affects how I walk through life.
I have a similar experience, I'm sure we all do, but I spend a lot of time of making sure that I come off as non-threatening, to smile a lot, tell jokes, seem more lighthearted. So it really means that it's hard to be depressed or angry in public. You can't just take that out in the world. You have to leave that at home. In conversations, try to make sure that, you know, like at networking events, to make sure that, you know, I'm smart enough to be there, that I'm not in the wrong place. And kind of have to justify my worth almost in every conversation. Constantly feel, especially in work situations, being undermined, like I may not have the experience. I guess also part of that is because I look younger than I actually am. But the other is just making sure that commonly my expertise is treated like opinion. Like I think I know what I'm talking about instead of I actually know what I'm talking about. But I also have to tone down my voice and tone so it doesn't seem as if that I'm overly aggressive, even though I really know what I am talking about sometimes. There are times where I actually forget that I'm different, because if I see a sea of white people, then I don't see anything that's weird. And then it's the time where I see one black person. It's like, oh wow, yeah. So try not to think about it too much, but it's one of the things where it feels like it's on autopilot. Just ignoring, averting my eyes, not looking at the people staring, just trying to stay steady in myself and not let it break me down.
I think for me, realizing that my color did make a difference, there was one instance, I wanted to go to a friend's church. They had a youth event, and it was in Vidor, Texas. And my parents had some concern, and they told me they were concerned for my safety because of that city's racist past. Mm-hmm. I did go to the church service, and I was the only black person in the entire church, and it was huge. Just other instances have been just, you know, walking up to the store, it's maybe 10 o'clock at night, you're going to Walmart, and I purposely, if I see, you know, a woman or white woman, I walk on the other side of the, you know, directly away from her so she does not feel uncomfortable. And you know, I know some people hear that and they say that that's crazy, but you can like see the fear on some people's faces, not all, but some people's faces. And it's just those things that you have to kind of think about that you do that normal people just don't really do. There have definitely been some incidences that have caused me to realize that, yes, my color did make a difference.
Yeah, great. Thank you, guys. I remember 35 years ago or so when I came out, I had this distinct sensation that it was the first time in my life I had ever felt like a minority. And I that's not true of you guys, I know. But some people have said, and I've heard it said, that it's harder to be black than to be gay in Austin. That may not be true, of course, in some places. But do you have a response to that? And also, I know that the black population of Austin is actually declining. So any comments on, you know, harder to be black than gay in Austin?
I would say yes, that's very true. It's very difficult to be black in Austin. Austin's a very liberal city, so it just has an atmosphere that it's okay to be gay here. The city of Austin has less than 7.6% of its population recorded as black, and that's rather alarming to most people who are moving here. I encounter people and they're like, where are the black people? You know, and I'm like, we're definitely here, but more in the suburbs. And because most people are moving here and they're comparing us to Houston and to Dallas. And I'm like, we're just definitely not those cities.
So definitely tougher to be black in Austin than gay. Some people may look at me and say, he's gay. But you necessarily can't look at me and say, he's gay. But for my skin color, you look at me and I'm black. Part of Austin's history is during a time of separate but equal, they built things on the east side to keep the black people. And so that hasn't changed much in terms of you have population of black people who are living in other parts of the city, but the majority of folks are still in that area. You know, you have the east side, 7th to 12th Street are mostly black, predominantly black. So what that means in life for me is that there are times on a regular basis that I'm in a store, or I'm in a restaurant, or I'm in a business, or in a gathering, and I look around and I'm the only black person, or there's one other black person. And sometimes I notice that, and sometimes it really doesn't make a difference. Other times I notice that, and it's an uncomfortable situation. And so I recognize that. I had a situation where I was in the Galleria, and we walked around the Galleria, me and my partner, for a while, and for about 30 minutes, and never saw another black person. We're in a store, and there were seven or eight people in the aisle. And this lady came in, walked past, five of those people walked up to me and said, do you work here? I would love to say that was a rare occurrence, but that is something that happens more frequently than not.
Right. Well, let's get to MCC Austin. Do you feel like we're doing a good job? Are there additional things that we could be doing here at MCC Austin to be welcoming not just the black community but to everyone? You know, to increase the diversity of our congregation.
So I think MCC Austin, I think, is doing a really good job of helping us feel welcomed, as well as not just helping us feel welcome, but tackling this issue. This is not an easy issue. This is not a popular issue. This is not a comfortable conversation. I think the fact that we're here and we're having this conversation is a good sign of MCC Austin's attempt of facing this issue and talking about it and making a difference and trying to make change. Reverend Bill and Reverend Karen have had great messages that have talked about black lives and have talked about the issues that that folks that look like me, black folks, are dealing with on a regular basis. And I think that helps. It has been said, if you do the same thing you've always done and expect a change, it's insanity. And so we can't continue as we have been and expect things to change. We have to have conversation. We have to have programs like Black Lives, or programs like Anxious to Talk About It, youth opportunities in our growth groups to have the conversation, to talk. It's important that we have conversation and we educate one another and are open to change. And I think MCC Austin has started that and been doing that, and that is great.
Excellent.
I think the reflection of transparency of how imperfect everyone is, I think, and how different we all are, is something that I think helps with being welcoming. So you don't feel out of place, because we are all part of the world, but both out there and both in here. Giving a venue to be able to have these hard discussions, make it so that we don't talk past each other, so we can get further than how was your day to how is life. The acknowledgement of the difficulty after the 2016 election and how everyone is adjusting and how everyone is being re-exposed to things that were always there but somehow people forgot or choose to ignore. I think making sure that we don't just act like it's all okay, that we all are having problems. Our problems might be different, both in type and scale. But knowing we have deacons to call, knowing that we have greeters to welcome us, I think that helps in terms of helping everyone feel welcome in this congregation.
I'll just echo all that and say that I do believe that our church is very welcoming of everyone, regardless of race or color. I'm very excited to see deacons who are people of color, people on the board who are Black. It really lets me know they are committed to diversity here.
Yeah. Let me ask Wesley to make a comment. He observed that he identifies himself as Black, but not as African American. And I just carelessly always kind of conflate those two things. And so would you make a comment about sure. why you make that distinction?
Sure. I consider myself part of the Black diaspora, but not African American because I'm first generation American. My mom is from Haiti and my dad is from the British Virgin Islands in Antigua. So my experience is different than Black Americans in general growing up. You hear about the talk. My parents didn't give me the talk growing up because they didn't have to grow up with racism, mm-hmm. like the way that it is here now anyway. Mm-hmm. So their experience was a lot different, so it was passed on a lot different, and some of the unique cultures of African Americans in this country is a lot different than how I grew up. I shouldn't say a lot, it's just subtle differences. It's like Canadian English and American English. And just like you can be white and be African American, technically speaking, like Elon Musk, he's from South Africa. I'm also Black and not African American.
Right. Speaking of the talk, Lino, you mentioned in the first service that was part of your experience, and it may have been yours as well, Al. I don't know, but could you just mention kind of your experience around that regard?
Yeah, when I turned 16 years old, my parents bought me a vehicle, and that was one of the first things that they set me down, and they said, we need to talk. And the talk is about how to drive and interact if you're pulled over with the police department and arrive back alive. And in my head, I was wondering, did my other friends get this talk? So, I went to school and was talking with them. They're like, what do you mean the talk? Because they were mostly all white. And it was like a huge eye-opening experience for me. But I do appreciate that they had that talk with me, because I am like Al, I do have a lead foot and have been pulled over many, many, many times. And thankfully, they've all, ended on well.
For me, the talk happened quite early. I grew up in the projects of New York City and moved to Texas when I was 15. And so the talk happened fairly early. From early as I can remember, my mom and dad always told us, you don't argue with the police. The police are right. They have guns. They have numbers. They have radios. If there's something that happens, we will deal with it after the fact. But in the moment, you're yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And that's how you handled it, because the key was to make sure that you didn't do anything that would cause you any harm. And so early on, that talk happened, and we lived it. And to this day, it's you give them respect. If they step out of line anyway, you don't address it in the moment. That puts you in greater danger. You address it after the fact, or not at all.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Well, we're in a little long, so let me finish with this question, and that is, for those of us who are white, what can we do to be more affirming to our Black coworkers and neighbors, community members? What do you feel that you need from me as a person who values Black lives and understands, to some extent, the societal situation? How can we be better neighbors?
So for me, I think a good part of it is making sure that you are having conversations, open to change. Someone. They said, I probably misquote this, and I'll probably misquote what they said, but they said, enter conversations as if you were wrong, looking for ways to learn. I find that when I'm sharing my experience or sharing what has happened with me, what is not helpful is to have someone try to make an excuse for it, or someone try to explain it away. Well, maybe this happened or maybe that, but for someone to listen to me, hear me out. I can say walk a mile in my shoes, but you can't walk a mile in my shoes. If you're not black, you can't experience exactly what I'm experiencing. And so the best way to experience that is to have a conversation and allow me to share and ask questions and be open to learning and open to understanding that our lives are different. There are privileges that I do not have simply because I have black skin. There's privileges that someone with white skin will have, and it's important you recognize that and enter conversations and enter in a way where you're not trying to excuse away my experience or trying to say, well, maybe they didn't know. The fact that they didn't know, the fact that I know I shouldn't speak. No one should speak. But that's life. It happens. So rather than explaining it away or trying to make excuses, listen and ask questions and be open to learning. I'm open to learning. And to have conversations happen, we're all open to learning and growing.
To dovetail into that about being open to learning, one is to move beyond the learning that you know and be open to the world as it appears through other people's eyes. Look into seeing the Netflix film, The 13th. Look at the James Baldwin film on Amazon Prime, if you have that. It's called I'm Not Your Negro. Learn about redlining and how segregation was formalized and how that even today has ramifications. Look at institutionalized racism and how laws have been changed just because of people of color or skin. And that goes into immigration laws, that goes into the justice system, it goes into loans, it goes into all facets of life and how you see the demonization of people over the years, mm-hmm. through the welfare system, about how it seems as though, if anyone's ever heard of the welfare queen and how that whole stereotype was made mm-hmm. up, if you look in just the election system about how people of color have been demonized as scary, as you'll be attacked, actually actively go through the work of learning and try to make sure that's a part of your life. However you get the news, through social media, through television, try to tune your ears to actually hearing it. And it's one of the things where once you see it, you can't unsee it. And so make sure that everyone's eyes are open so that you can poke out the little things. Someone the other day called me boy. And it's not because it was meant as an insult. It's just because of ignorance. And when I pointed it out, I was left with dead silence. So if someone points out something, don't be offended for someone that is exposing some ignorance on your side.
And I would like to add that many of us see videos on Facebook and Instagram and those places of the person in the Target, and there being some type of injustice or racism is being shown towards them, and no one speaks up. I would just like to add that if you are white or Caucasian, please speak up. Speak up against this type of racism and prejudice, because if people continue to be silent, then it just only breeds that racism.
Great. Well, thank you all for participating in this panel. I'd like to close with a quote from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in his letter from the Birmingham jail. Quote, "We will have to repent in this generation not merely for the hateful words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence of the good people. Human progress never rolls in on wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless effort of people willing to be co-workers with God." Unquote. So my friends, I'm hoping that we at MCC Austin, by continuing conversations like this, can learn together to be co-workers with God So let's thank the panel again. Thank you guys. And thank you all for participating in what's sometimes a difficult conversation. Thank you.